Hello, 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 and welcome to Buzz Binging. My name is Natalie.
And I'm Christy, her mom.
And we are going to be talking about Season 4, Episode 7, The Hereditary Principle, and Season 4, Episode 8, 48-1. My favorite episodes of this season, if you can tell. We'll get to it.
We are going to get to it. So we're going to start with our usual disclaimers and caveats and all of those things, which include that there will be spoilers. There aren't too many seasons of The Crown left, and you should have watched some Crown by now. No surprises, I would imagine. And there's going to be cursing. Oh, yes, there will be cursing.
There definitely
will. Yeah, and we are having things to drink. What are you having to drink?
I am having, and I know I've had this recently on the podcast. Well, recently is relative, but I'm having strawberry lemonade. Oh. I don't know why. It's just in my fridge.
You know, it occurred to me after the fact and after I listened to the episode, the one where you had milk, you were drinking it out of the carton. I was thinking, that is a full Daphne Bridgerton move. Well done.
They at least put it in cups. But yeah, I was drinking it cold. I wasn't trying to warm it up on a stove.
Well, no, they do.
They do pass it around, but because they probably can find the cups.
Right, straight out of the bottle.
So, well, and also I'm not sharing it with anyone, so might as well. Well, okay, to be fair, I was usually using like a different cup, like to put the milk in, but it just seemed so useless. And then I would have to clean the cup and it was a whole thing. And I don't have a dishwasher. So, I mean, it was just going to be like me.
I have made so Daphne Bridgerton.
Listen, I'm living alone and I drink my own milk and nobody else drinks it. So there's no chance of backwash. Well, okay. There's no chance of spreading disease. So it's not like I'm sharing it with anybody. Same with my lemonade. You can just get over it. What are you drinking?
I am having a cranberry ginger with a little bit of lime mocktail.
It's so good. I love that mocktail.
Yeah, it's really, really good. And I would point out that there are a couple reasons for this. I'm still on the fence about what I'm actually doing for Lent, although I think I'm giving up chocolate and not giving up alcohol. We'll see. Okay. But I also feel like in this episode, you know, just a little restraint would have been like a good thing for some of these people. Cool. Maybe that's one of the lessons that we should be learning.
Yeah, maybe. All right, getting started. Season 4, Episode 7, The Hereditary Principle. My first note is, oh no, someone is coughing. That means they're dying.
Well, they're coughing and they're smoking. It's like, oh, definitely death.
And it's Margaret. And then I said, oh no, it's the Margaret episode.
Right. I said that too. Here we go. It's the Margaret episode.
Right. We see her smoking and coughing. And then we also see a mental institution watching the same TV program that Margaret is.
It looks a little like Oscars. It's not BAFTAs, but it looks like BAFTAs or Oscars or something.
They're just going to an event. I don't know if it's like an award show or anything, but
it's some sort of charitable thing where the royals in Hollywood get together and blah blah blah, and the queens gonna be there and so on and so forth. And so in my note, I must have like conflated things. Because you see these people in a mental hospital that they're watching and they're saluting the queen. And so then my note was, and I'm giving things away, so I really shouldn't in my note. So I'm going to try not to, but Margaret's potential boy toy, that's the second part of my note, shows up to gossip with her. And they start dancing to Let's Dance by David Bowie, which is like one of the best dance songs like ever.
I mean, it has dance in the title. What are you supposed to do? Not. And then I would also like to say that, okay, two things. First, the patients that are like saluting are named Catherine and Narissa. We find that out immediately. That's important later, I guess. My note says, and I forgot a lot about this episode, so it's even better without knowing the context. Margaret is looking at a guy on a bike arrive at her house. In parentheses, I put, I'll just call him Father Brown. I forgot he becomes a priest. So it's making so much better.
I'm her gay priest friend. I'm like,
I forgot he was a gay priest because I he just kind of was on the bike, and I looked at him and was like, all right, I'll just call you Father Brown in my head and in my notes. Right. But then he becomes a priest, and I'm just like, that's actually perfect.
Well, right. He could be Discount Tony. He could be, because he's on a bike, not a motorcycle. I mean, there are a lot of potential things here. But one of the things is he goes by this nickname, Dazzle. And the actor that plays him,
he's going to be, I'm sorry. When you give yourself the nickname Dazzle, that should be nicknames define your sexuality or who you are or whatever. But when people call you Dazzle and that doesn't tip anything off to you about who they are as a person, it's kind of confusing to me why you didn't think ahead.
Yeah, it's
and again, not to be judgmental or anything, prejudiced. It's just, come on, his nickname's Dazzle.
Right.
And he's actually Garrick. Why are you calling him Dazzle?
Yeah, that's kind of a weird choice. So the actor that's playing him is the guy who plays Cormoran Strike on the CB Strike series. That's the
I recognized him from somewhere, but because he showed the pilot of that.
Right, because that comes from the J.K. Rowling detective novels, where she's not being J.K. Rowling, but she is J.K. Rowling.
She still is, but anyway.
Books, actually. The books have been fun. And the show has been fun because they're having another series right now. It's on HBO, in case you're curious.
Oh, it's on HBO?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Sorry, yeah, that's completely not related.
Right. And so Margaret is basically hitting on this poor guy.
Well, I'd like to point out, I put this in my notes, and I absolutely agree with myself, but I act like I'm a different person when I write the notes, but sometimes it feels like that. I literally did this yesterday, so I should just, that's not important. All they seem to do with Margaret is have her get drunk, dance, or sing with her guy of the week. That's all they do with her. Yeah, she's supposed to be fun loving, but you can do other things and be fun loving.
Yeah, I think what they portray is so limited. I think they're trying to show how small and sad her life is. And it's at least in part by choice. She has children. She has things she could be doing. She has all the money in the fucking world. I mean, come on. Yeah, there are definitely things that she could be doing. And there's a discussion she has with Elizabeth
later. Oh, it's a great discussion. We'll get there, but it's so clear that she could be doing anything, and the writers are basically saying, oh no, this is all she does. She dances around, gets drunk, and smokes.
Because that's her whole thing in the universe. So he rebuffs her advances and is like, oh, by the way, I'm joining the priesthood.
Isn't that the worst rejection? That's just so funny.
Well, I mean, it could have been, oh, by the way, I'm gay, which would also apparently have been true.
It's kind of it's a Rosaline and Romeo situation where he's just oh my God, I really got rejected. She's going to join the convent. It's just get thee to a nunnery kind of thing. It's that's a different Shakespeare play, but that's not important. But to be fair, at least you were rejected and you're not, it's not like they're going for another person. They're just going for God. So
they're going for it could be worse.
Life. It could just be much worse.
Exactly. It could be much worse. So Margaret is telling Elizabeth all about it. And she is funny. She's quipping about, oh, I've sent someone to the priesthood now. And Elizabeth's he's a friend of Dorothy, which is not a term I had heard before, but apparently.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. So I in parentheses, I just was gay question mark. I mean, his nickname is Dazzle.
Yeah.
And again, I feel bad for judging based off the nickname, but come on, Dazzle.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, especially in that era when it was very uncommon. I mean, most people who, oh God, there's so many
proud guys,
right?
Would go for that kind of nickname, right? Kind of thing. And again, not the stereotype, but it's it's clear the TV show wants us to stereotype him,
right? Well, and the other part of it is there was no that was considered a very unusual life choice in that time period. So yeah. So While they're sitting there talking, Alyssa's like, hey, that cough sounds bad. And Mark's like, I'm fine, and coughs up blood.
Yeah, that's not great. Now you're going to die like daddy. Then yeah. You see her getting surgery. The radio's playing in the institution talking about, oh, yeah, this is what's happening with Princess Margaret. She's had no like prior illnesses or whatever, or symptoms or something. Like, yes, she has. She smokes She apparently smokes like 20 cigarettes a day. That's a problem.
I think they said 60.
I didn't go back and check.
It's insane. So, it just was kind of nuts.
You must see that you have a problem if you like smoke 60 cigarettes a day. Like, how do you not indicate? How is that not indicative of a problem?
Yeah. Yeah. So Catherine and Narissa are getting upset, and so they're caring people say, "Hey, let's go to bed. You take your doll." Blah blah blah. Everyone's got concerns. Then some time passes, and it's
Edward's birthday
at Balmoral. They are celebrating it. Catherine and Nurse are celebrating at the mental health hospital.
Well, no, they're celebrating Catherine's birthday, not Edward's.
Oh, is it Catherine's birthday? Okay. Mm-hmm.
I double checked because I was confused.
Oh, well, I was confused too.
This counts as Helena Bonham Carter singing Seven.
Oh, you mean
she sings Happy Birthday.
Happy Birthday counts as
I have to count all of them, Mama. It's only fair. I counted Ibble Dibble. I think I need to count Happy Birthday.
Holy crap. Okay.
Go ahead, spill speech.
But Charles starts talking, they're all at the dinner table about Edward's birthday. And he starts talking about,
You mean Philip?
Well, yeah, Philip starts giving a speech, but in his speech, he's talking about he's doing a toast to Edward and how he wasn't really sure they wanted to have additional kids, blah, blah, blah. And Charles like, oh, the B team.
Yeah, that was Anne. Anne says B team. Charles says second 11.
And then Philip calls Edward the runt of the litter. Here's to what's your name?
Yeah, I know that part.
The runt of the litter. And you can see Edward's kind of like, fuck you, Dad.
Also the way that he said, the second round came not from pleasure but from joy and reconciliation, so make up sex, like, great.
Okay,
you're that's supposed to make everyone feel better, I guess.
Yes, well, I mean, Elizabeth says joy and Philip says reconciliation because he's like, well, I can't say pleasure because look on Anne's face. So whatever, it's like, okay, this is all very, very awkward and strange, and everyone feels the awkwardness. Margaret is on oxygen at this point, and you see like Edward testing out the trombone he got for his birthday in the background. That Margaret says she is swearing off men, cigarettes, and alcohol, which is,
let's see how long that lasts.
Well, my mocktail, whatever. So she's ready to focus on her duty as a royal and working, and she wants to
work. The way she phrases it, I think, is much better than the way she phrased it before. She says she basically wants Elizabeth to give her as much responsibility as she can. It's much better phrased because it's not being like, I want to be co-queen. It's like, no, that's not going to happen. That's not how things work. And also, fuck no. But also, the way that she puts it now is like, please, whatever is in your power to give me stuff to do, please just do it because I'm bored out of my mind and I need something to fulfill me. Like, right. I need something to do. Like, I think this is very reasonable. I think this makes a lot of sense and it's not asking too much.
Well, right. And of course, we're going to see how that actually plays out. But Elizabeth's just looking uncomfortable at her.
Then you go back over to, they pan over to Edward again, looking at his presents, and he has like a Creature of the Black Lagoon, like scuba mask thing. That's like either from Creature of the Black Lagoon or from like Scooby-Doo. Like, it's ridiculous.
It does.
Really funny.
you know, they're all kind of making fun of him for that.
And, what is he going to use that for? Why?
Who the fuck knows? I don't know. I mean, like, it's like,
yeah, I'll just learn the trombone. I'll just use this scuba helmet. Like, really? This is such random gifts.
Yeah, they do seem, but they're expensive. So they, later on in a couple of days, Elizabeth shows up at Kensington, apparently unannounced, and Margaret says, oh, she, you can tell that she's unhappy. It's great facial acting that Martin is there. Lurch. And right. She refers to him as Lurch. Like,
I love,
you know, this can't be good news because you've got Lurch with you. So Elizabeth's like, well, she lets Martin do the dirty works. Like, there's only a specific number of senior royals who can deputize for the queen. And now that Edward's 21, we have
her, and
we
so
don't need you. Yeah.
He outranks her, and now he takes her place, which it's gotta hurt.
But and, you also fucking should have known this shit.
Yeah, right? They should have told her by now.
Well, or she should have just known it. I mean, I am sure this happened when her mother was, you know, pushed out.
Well, right? I don't know. I think her mother still does it for her. I think she's also one of, there are four kids. There's Philip. And I guess the queen mother also can deputize. I think that's what they mean.
Oh, by rank, because she's still a queen.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense.
That
does make sense. And so, you know, Margaret's like, look, she has the same reaction that the queen mother, you know, basically did when Elizabeth ascended, like, hey, I'm getting good at this stuff. I know what I'm doing. And you're going to put this young kid in? Come on, that's ridiculous. And of course, you know, that is not exactly how it plays out. But she, you know, is still expected to show up, you know, and she says, I need to talk to my sister. So Martin is, she keeps ordering Martin out, and he doesn't leave until Elizabeth says so. Margaret says, look, I lost all of my things to do, because Elizabeth gives the, oh, you can focus on other passions. She's like, this is it. I lost my charities. You know, no one wants me around. My friends don't want me around anymore because I guess I'm bitchier and difficult, which,
true.
And you know, I lost all my charities to Diana because they all want her. She's young and she's pretty and they don't want the old bat. So
similar to like what Anne was saying before about her feeling pushed out by Diana.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, the young pretty thing. And of course, as we will see, Diana apparently has a lot of time on her hands.
Yeah.
It seems rather odd, and we need to talk about that at the proper time, which is not now. She goes to Mystique, Margaret does, and to hang out with her friends and be depressed and try to drown herself in her pool.
Yeah. Eye patch guy still does not have an eye patch. I'm still disappointed. What'd you say?
I laughed.
Oh, okay. It just kind of broke up on my end.
Sorry.
But yeah, she seems to be drinking again and bored. The friend, she's like in the pool, and there's this whole thing of her like being at the bottom of the pool, and it's so dramatic, and she's, life's just kind of passing her by. And the friend calls Charles to help with Margaret for some reason. I don't know why she called Charles, but I guess Elizabeth was probably busy to go all the way there. But also, what is Charles doing?
Well, right. I mean, but you have to think that there are a small number of people that might be able to get Margaret's attention, like, you know, people who are similarly like second hand whatever, that feel kind of like they don't have a role, or they have the role that they think they should have. So Charles shows up, and Margaret is on the bottom of the pool, but she, you know, she gets out, she sits down, they have a little lunch or dinner or
whatever. Well, before that, he's like, oh, look at the garden, and she just brings up Boy Toy, who is a gardener before, and I'm just like,
yeah, great. I called him Boy Toy too. Then when they have lunch, Charles is like, oh, things are worse with Diana than ever, but she's pregnant again, but you know, we're both gloomy and quarreling. But
we never see each other. Oh, but I love this part of the like these two lines. Like, it's left me with no option but to start seeing someone. And then like, yes, I think we all know about that. Yeah. And he's like, no, a therapist. I was like, oh, okay, well, that's better. But I think you're still seeing Camilla.
Yeah, and you know, everybody kind of knows. He just looks sulky. Like, I've been doing such a great job hiding it. Bullshit.
Well, him and Anne want her to see a therapist, and she's like reluctantly like, fine, yeah, sure, I'll go to a therapist. So she goes to a therapist.
But she is not enthusiastic. She doesn't want to have to drive to the doctor. She thinks the doctor is calling, you know, the very first thing out of the box, the doctor is like, well, you know, your reluctance is common. She's like, are you calling me common? And well, you know, this is, you know, for your generation is normal. It's like, are you calling me old? It's like, you know, come on. And she wants to be called ma'am and just all of these things, right?
Well, Margaret says self-pity won't get you very far. And that's why she's mostly hesitant to go to a therapist. But the therapist brings up her cousins in the institution who, we find out they're her cousins who have mental issues. And so she did not know about that. And so she goes and visits Elizabeth, and it's like Easter or something, and they're talking, and she brings up the cousins, and she's just like, oh, I was aware. Elizabeth says, oh yeah, I was aware of them, but I thought they died. And then they look in Burke's, which is like the lineage of the family, and it says in Burke's that they died. But Margaret wants to find out for sure. But there is a lot of cute little things with the sisters. Like, there's one part when they're leaving like tea or something, when like Margaret hits the button and she's like, wait, that's my button. That's really cute. I like it.
And it's cute the way they interact, like, because the Burks or Debrett's or whatever it is on like the full wall in the library is just all of these, you know, aristocracy things. And so they have to climb up on stairs and they're worried they're gonna fall because they're old people, you know, those kinds of things. It's like, it is kind of cute. But in any case,
they think that they're dead, but Margaret wants to make sure. And she finds out that Father Brown's going to be in town, and she's like, fine, I'll make him do my dirty work. So she drives them to the institution, which is a very dangerous thing.
She's such a bad driver. Oh my God, she's awful.
And he's like praying on his rosary, and it's really funny. And then they get there and she's like, okay, go in. And you are going to find out if they are alive or not. And then he comes back and he's like, yes, they are alive, but there are more. There are more cousins because they have cousins in there as well. So there's apparently a total of 5 cousins in there that are related to the royal family.
Right. And he points out that they are like children. And they have pictures. They know who Elizabeth and Margaret are. And Margaret gets fucking furious. As she should, I think.
Yeah, no, that's ridiculous. That's, first of all, they're declared dead. That's fucking vile.
Yeah. But the time of the deaths was 1940 and 1961. So like neither of those deaths is like significant from we're declaring them dead before Bertie takes the throne. We're not, you know, doing that. So again, some of the explanations she gets from the Queen Mother, like, oh, we had to hide them, whatever, because, you know, call into question the bloodline.
Legitimacy. Well, yeah, no, she goes to Scotland to visit the Queen Mother. They go on a walk. And yeah, that's basically what the Queen Mother says. Basically, like, she's like, all right, yeah, well, that would it's her side of the family too. They're her nieces and all that stuff. So it's like, they would call into question the legitimacy of the bloodline and all that. And Margaret's upset. And then also Margaret says during that conversation, not everything wrong with this family can be explained away by the abdication.
Well, but the Queen Mother has a legit point. Like, we didn't need to hide their existence when there was no chance your father was going to take the throne, right? You know, when he's just a prince who married a woman, it's no big deal. But when he is like the king,
emperor,
you know, we kind of have to
make sacrifices, and sadly they were the sacrifices. And I think it's just so ridiculous that they were declared dead in the first place.
Right, but the declaration of death, and we don't know what happened with that because this show does not say that. It doesn't say anything about when that happened because, again, you know, one shows that the one died in 1940, which would have been after the abdication, and one died in 1961, which is, you know, well after Elizabeth took the throne. So it's not clear that the death thing was something that the Queen Mother had anything to do with. The putting in an institution and basically hiding him away, yeah, I think she definitely has something to do with that. Now, of course, from what I can see, they probably need to be in some sort of care home.
Absolutely. I'm not saying that they shouldn't be. I'm just saying that it's kind of ridiculous that they were declared dead. And also,
even more ridiculous to me is, like, you didn't tell your own fucking family.
You know, especially the queen should know about, like, any of that. And but the problem is, like, when Margaret goes back to the therapist and is talking to her about this ridiculousness, the therapist is like, oh no, it's not your part of it's not your mother's part of the bloodline, it's somebody that her, like,
brother married,
so yeah. It was from that part of the bloodline, so it wouldn't affect you. So
right, but nobody knew that because, again, you know, the genetic research kind of thing that would reveal those things about, like, on what line this hereditary issue was found. You know, when we're seeing this is it's set like early 90s or late 80s, early 90s.
Late 80s.
Right. So, you know, in 1940, no one would have known.
Mm-hmm.
So that you know, the whether or not the bloodline would be questioned would not have been something that would have been known in 1940.
Right. She talks to the therapist. She goes back to Kensington and is talking to Father Brown, and she's like, I'm getting a prescription, certain kind of therapy, I'm gonna have to do more exercise, and I'm not supposed to drink, but she's gonna drink anyway. And then Father Brown is like, oh, I'm ecstatic to be a priest. Like, I'm really happy to have this in my life. And he's just like, hey, you should convert to Catholicism because that's what priests do. And she's just like, no, because I am a part of the Church of England. It would be seen as basically an act of war if I were to, not abdicate, but convert. And so
he's like, oh, you should have a higher power and blah, blah, blah. She's like, I do. It's called the royal family. And he's like, but you're an outsider and blah, blah, blah. She's like, I'm in the middle of it. Don't talk about that. Like, I'm not part of it. Cause I am part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So basically she's like, you know, you need to mind your own damn business. And I kind of agree with that. She defends the royal family ultimately. And he leaves and she's like, look, pray for me. And I wanted to make a note about this too, because I was really noticing the apartments that Margaret has in Kensington, you know, like she's done all of this constant redecoration, but from the rip in this episode, her apartments look like the inside of Buckingham Palace.
I mean, yeah, no, seriously. It doesn't look like Kensington or her apartment.
It doesn't look like Kensington. It doesn't look like, you know, one of the previous iterations.
Well, maybe it's like a part of Kensington, but it's not her apartment.
It doesn't seem that way.
I don't know what they're doing. So she basically is like, I don't want to see Father Brown again, and just pray for me. Sure. Then she goes back to her friend's place in wherever,
Bahamas. Mystique.
And sings, because of course there's another Helena Bonham Carter singing eight, and I think this is the last one, thank God. But she's also smoking again and
drinking, all that stuff. Drinking, partying, smoking. But I will say this, she has, and this is something that Helena Bonham Carter has done really, really well, even from when she was a very young actress. She does the spoiled, petulant, sulky child look really, really well. And she's doing that. She's, you know, like sitting by the pool looking, you know, I'm so put out. I should have more, that kind of thing. And that's basically the end of the episode.
We see, you go ahead.
We see that the cousins, Catherine and Nerissa, one lived to, until 1986 and one until 2014.
Mm-hmm.
And that there was something else, or was it just about the two of them?
I think it's just about the two of them. We don't really hear about the three other cousins, but they had odd names, except for Rosemary, which is a normal name. But
right.
They had other names that were just like, what the heck?
Yeah. But you know, they definitely, you know, lived for much longer than 1940 and 1961. Right. So yeah. What was your best part of this episode?
My first thing is they at least try therapy. Helena Bonham Carter's performance is great. The family dynamics are great. Like, I love, like, the, I love the dinner scene with, at, like, the birthday, and also with Elizabeth and Margaret, with their sibling dynamic is fun. And seeing most of the characters we don't get to see all the time, like the Queen Mother and the two other kids and all that stuff, seeing them is nice. And yeah, Philip's speech is funny. What about you?
What I wrote down was Helena Bonham Carter's performance, Margaret confronting the Queen Mother. I think that, you know, somebody needed to call her down, because, you know, Queen Mother's just basically, you know, it's like that Tommy Lasalle's idea of, well, you know, we did what we had to do kind of thing. And somebody needed to talk to her about it. And I'm glad that Margaret did that. I agree with you about the family dynamics. I didn't write it down as a positive. I think, you know, that there's some reasons for that, but whatever. So what was your worst part?
Margaret Thatcher's voice. it drags a bit. It does drag a bit. Like, there are a couple of moments here and there. I can't really specifically name them, but it just, I don't know, something was off. And Margaret is a little bit dramatic, because when she brings it up with her mom, she's just like, they're facing the same cruelty I face with this family. I'm like, no, oh, yeah. No, you're not.
Yeah, that,
let's calm down a little bit. That probably a little bit dramatic. Also, it's just kind of sad. Like, it's just sad to think about how these poor family members are being treated by their own family, like they don't exist. And they clearly know that they are part of the family and that they know who their family is, and they still love them, but they're constantly ignored. And obviously, I'm not sure exactly what the whole diagnosis is for them. So I'm not sure how aware or how receptive they are to those kinds of things, but it's just sad. It's sad to think about, because it's not their fault.
No, it's not. And you know, you don't suddenly see Margaret going to visit them, or, you know, it's not like you don't get a sense of there being any massive change because this information's known. So
that's true.
I don't know. I don't know. And I don't know what to make of all of that. You know, obviously I think it's probably appropriate based on their level of ability to care for themselves and for them to be in
and care facility. It makes sense, but it's still sad that they're being ignored.
Right. So my worst parts were the secrets, the montages, Margaret backsliding, and the same old storyline. So,
and the what storyline?
Same old storyline.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, we have this factoid that the writers found out about. And, you know, I think it is a completely legit thing, but you get the sense that they've made up this entire storyline to go around, hey, we found out about this thing. As opposed to, this is something that actually, you know, this event actually happened with Margaret involved in it. It may have, it may not have, but it's very hard to say that that's factual.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's just like the, and Margaret's attitudes about herself or anything else doesn't change. She goes back to her same habits. She goes back to, you know, and even with the health scare and everything else, she just, I don't know. And of course, you know, the montage thing, it's like, ugh.
Yeah, it's not.
And fun. I think that is something that the showrunners in these two seasons, 3 and 4, do far more than we had seen before. And it's just bleh to me. How did you grade this episode?
I gave it a B. I think it's fine. It does cover a topic that is interesting, but it's sad and all that stuff. But I don't know. It's a Margaret episode. It's a constant wheel of self-destruction, even though she knows and is aware of the effect it has on her physically and emotionally. Well, I don't know about emotionally, but like at least physically, she had to get surgery. Like, I mean, it's common sense. You were on oxygen for a while. You don't think that you should just stop smoking. I mean, I know it's hard to like completely quit, especially if you were that frequent of a user, but I think that it's mentioned that she's trying to make an attempt, but we don't see it. And I think that's just disappointing. But also like the whole secrets thing, it's like, why did you keep it a secret? Like, well, at least not from family members. Why did you keep it a secret? I mean, it doesn't make much sense to me. But yeah, a B. It's fine. It's not great, yeah, but it's fine.
I gave it a B minus. And again, I think it's the pacing and the montage stuff that B minused it for me. It's, again, I agree with you. It's fine as an episode. And there's some good performances. And of course, there's some, you know, beautiful cinematography and stuff like that. But it just, meh.
Yeah.
All right. So we are moving on to season 4, episode 8.
41,
which is, of course, the big Margaret Thatcher episode, or one of them. There are several in this season, I guess. And your face says it all, although our listeners cannot see it.
They already know how I feel about Margaret Thatcher. Or at least if they don't, I don't like her as a character. I don't like her. Like, I have no idea about the actual person. Obviously, she was called the Iron Lady. And she's supposed to be stoic and all that stuff. And her voice is just awful. But I just don't. She's just so stubborn. And when it's going to end it with a common good, that is apartheid, like sanctions on apartheid. It's like, why does it have to be qualified too much? Like, I understand, we'll get into it. It's just, it pisses me off.
Right. So this actually opens with Claire Foy, which it's like, yay, yeah. Claire Foy, yes!
I can already tell you that's the best part for me. I love Claire Foy.
That's best part for me too. She is so great. And she's giving her the Elizabeth 21st birthday speech. About coming of age during the Second World War. It is a really great speech, and I probably have some quotes of it later, but what she says is that
they get the highlights, yeah, later.
She talks about my whole life will be devoted to your service and the Commonwealth to which we all belong.
Yes.
And she delivers it so, so, so well. But this is intercut with Margaret Thatcher, who is then Margaret Roberts at Oxford. And she is the only woman in a large cadre of men. And we also see this writer who is writing this very tortured novel. No, that's after the credits, though.
His name is Michael Shea, and he is kind of important later.
Yes. But it turns out that writer is a press secretary or a speechwriter or whatever for the Queen. He's one of the Queen's staff. And he has written this very tortured novel, and he's trying to get it published, and he goes to an agent. But the agent's like, oh, we'll try to shop this around, whatever. He goes to work, and he is told by one of his secretaries that there's a rumor abroad about a strain between the PM and Elizabeth over apartheid.
Yeah, and they're kind of right, given the couple. Yes. Okay, I don't know about real life, but especially in the show, they make it very clear. Again, this is a lot of extrapolation.
Right. I do think that some of this
is true.
Was documented, right?
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
There's a Commonwealth of Nations meeting coming up in the Bahamas. That would have been documented. The resolutions that were passed as part of that would have been well documented.
And how much time it took to get
right, the negotiations to get to that language, I'm sure is well documented.
I'm talking more about what happens in the latter half of the episode.
I would suspect would be. So we're going to get to it.
He gives his book to his publisher. It's huge. It's 1985 now. He goes to the palace and he works in the palace. So great. But yeah, Thatcher is refusing to back Elizabeth on the apartheid regime, like sanctions on the apartheid regime in South Africa. They want Michael Shea, to write a statement about it, but he says that that would be stating a point of view about the prime minister, which the queen, quote, doesn't do. So, don't publish it, but like she definitely has opinions, but right. And a point of view that she shares with everybody else. But apparently the 48 Commonwealth countries are for putting economic pressure, but one country is against, which is the UK, because of Thatcher. And right. Unanimity is required.
Right. So the PM is talking to her ministers about how apparently the Queen is going to put pressure on the PM. Like Elizabeth wants to meet with her and wants to put pressure on her about this resolution. And the PM,
which is something important, I guess, in season 5.
I'm sorry?
I said they're going on the royal yacht, which is apparently important in season 5.
Right. So, but the PM, and she says a couple of interesting things. I agree with some of them, I don't agree with others. Like, she's like, we have these people who are leaders of countries within this Commonwealth, like, Uganda, that have atrocious human rights records. Mm-hmm. And we're not doing anything about them.
Yeah.
Margaret. we're hugging them and calling them family, and we're not doing anything about that.
But this is a really big issue that you need to solve.
Right. And Elizabeth, she's cooking for the ministers, and Elizabeth is getting her wardrobe for this Commonwealth meeting. And she gets this bright yellow dress and this, to highlight the flag and this, that, and the other thing.
Or to look like a highlighter, yeah. But
Andrew shows up while Elizabeth is getting her clothes, though. And I find this interesting, this interchange between Andrew and Elizabeth, because Andrew's shown up because he wants Edward to be his best man and not Charles. And, he starts making fun of Charles, like Charles wants to have a slimmed down role for the monarchy. Well, here's a slimmed down role for you, asshole, more or less.
That is funny.
I agree with that sentiment, but then he goes into like a Margaret speech, like, better than him.
It's the whole thing about the Duke of York speech he gave in the last, in the favorites episode. It's like they're known for like killing their brother or like become first in line, but I'm just kind of like I just put Jesus, not the second in line BS.
Yes, like, he does the whole annoying second in line BS. Of course, at this point, he's not second in line anymore.
Yeah, no, you have both William fourth. And I think Harry's already born now.
Yeah, I think so too. So it's like you're like pretty far behind
the list. You would have to do a full Richard III. Like, do you really want to do that?
Yeah, that would be.
You want to do that?
That would be kind of bad, but it's not.
And we
like
briefly see his fiance.
Sarah Ferguson. You see her very briefly. She's got the look for sure. The big fluffy
red hair,
giant bow in the hair. Oh, that was Sarah Ferguson all the way.
I don't even know who she is.
because they subsequently got divorced.
Well, yeah, that's probably why.
But if you look her up, she was like, I don't know. She had some miniature stardom for
she got out of there in a timely manner, so probably for the best.
So Elizabeth arrives in the Bahamas she gives a speech, and she's clearly talking to the prime minister about compromise being important and making concessions, and you know, we've got to all get
together. And she says that the apartheid has no place in the modern world, which absolutely it doesn't. Right. I think that's a great sentiment to have. Obviously, it should be the popular sentiment to have, but right. I think that the prime minister says that nothing will be improved by sanctions because it would devastate the UK government as well because of trade with South Africa, which is a problem, but like, come on.
Well, no, but she says one other thing in this too, and this is accurate. It's like, you know, it's going to leave South Africa a wasteland. Because the sanctions don't just affect the rich, they affect the poor as well.
Yeah.
And you know, and Elizabeth's like, well, but I talked to the head of Zambia, who apparently is like one of these dictators, who is part of the Commonwealth. And you know, I talked to the head of Zambia, and he says that they all want it because it would be their wasteland. And she's kind of, you know, Thatcher's like, this isn't charity. You know, it's not doing charity to leave people in even more extreme poverty. But I do agree that apartheid needed to end, however they were going to make that happen. And you know, if the way they made it happen is, you know, sanctions, and it ends up being, you know, it makes it theirs to rebuild. I kind of agree with that idea. It's like it makes it the people's to come together and rebuild it how they see that it should be as a democracy. That's how it ought
to. I agree. So basically the 48 countries are putting together a statement for tougher sanctions, and Elizabeth wants the prime minister to sign it. The prime minister and Dennis, her husband, talk on the phone, and I hate this line because she's just like, don't be a know-it-all. It's unbecoming. And I said, take your own advice, bitch.
Right. But it's interesting to me because Thatcher points out that the way Elizabeth is asking sounds like a directive, and it does. And you know, Elizabeth's kind of like, well, you know, take it as a strong suggestion kind of thing. You know, like
she just take it as a question.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, it is a fight that she wants to win. Elizabeth does. And so they keep going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth about the wording of this resolution. And they go through all of these terms, measures,
controls,
sanctions, protocols.
Like, get over yourself. And then
limit, whatever.
And I said, stop being such a stubborn bitch. It's one word. And then they bring, and also that person, whoever is like typing this out, has to type out the entire document all over again just to get one word different. That's such a waste of resources. And
back
I hate
the day, it. That was the thing.
Well, yeah, but come on. And then she says, they get the author guy to come in, Michael Shea to come in, and he comes up with the word signals. And they're like, great. At least she said yes to that. Then they put more hairspray on that wig and it will turn to iron.
But wait, hang on. She agrees to signals, and Michael Shea points out that she also agreed to some things in the documents that had they been termed sanctions, she would never agree to.
Yeah.
So, you know, definitely there are some things, and Elizabeth definitely sees this as a win. There's a discussion because, you know, Thatcher shows up to the signing, the official signing or whatever it is. And her second in command, this Jeffrey guy who comes up later, sees it and he's like, look, this is a compromise. You're compromising. And she's like, I did not. Did one person move to the 48 or did 48 move to the one? And she says she
changed to something else.
Well, not changed, but what it means has a broader interpretation.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And it can be like interpreted in a different way. But right. I also, when they take the picture, I hate her red dress. It's so bad. then author guy goes to the publisher. Apparently there have been no offers yet. Oh no, I don't care. And if he doesn't want to continue being an author, if his magnum opus doesn't work, and he also doesn't want to betray his employers by doing a political thriller, which would be popular. Okay.
He's like, I wouldn't do that. I would never do that. I'm old fashioned. I want to be loyal, blah, blah, blah. He gets to work and there he finds out that the Today paper, which is I guess like a rag, it's a tabloid, is running a story about some rift between Elizabeth and the PM. And Elizabeth, and this is where things get super weird.
This is the extrapolation bullshit that I'm just like, we don't know if Elizabeth really wanted to make a statement in the paper. We don't Correct. Know if she told Michael Shea to go and tell the newspaper, this is, I don't like the prime minister. I don't like what she's doing. We don't know. And that's the whole thing. And the fact that they take a stance in the fact that, oh yeah, she definitely did. It's like, did she? I don't know about that. But well,
they make it out. Again, the way they make it out is you've got this super loyal guy, Michael Shea, and she's telling him, you need to, you know, take a stand on this, you know, let the world know that this is how I feel about it. And he's like, I'm not going to do it. I want that noted for the record. He tells Martin, and Martin's like, yeah, it's noted. You got to do the job, right?
Yeah. And also, like, the no compassion and staying silent is mentioned again.
Yes.
Jesus Christ. I keep saying Jesus Christ. I'm at a loss for words sometimes when they just keep reusing the same thing over and over and over again. It's so upsetting.
Right. Well, and Michael Shea's recommendation had been in this meeting with Elizabeth, he's like, look, you should be saying something about, oh, PM's doing a good job or something along those lines.
Or just say nothing.
Right. But you don't put something else out there. And so you know, he tells her to do that. And he's like, well, and if I were going to do it, I'd do it with a bigger, you know, publication than the Today newspaper. I mean, that's a rag and no one's going to believe them.
Yeah.
I'll leave that to you.
Yes, he goes to the Sunday Times guy to confirm the rift and make the whole conversation. The prime minister is warned about the article from her counselors or whatever, and the paper is published. The employees get their copies of the paper to get the inside scoop, and everyone reads the story, and many have dogs with them. And then also I was worried that when Charles was at the table like reading the paper, it was going to pan over and it would be Camilla. I was so scared, but then it was Andrew, and I was still scared, but like,
it's his pet. That's his pet, you know, like,
ugh, that bitch. Anyway, his bitch. Actually, I think that he's more her bitch, but the article doesn't do well for either side. Margaret Thatcher says, when Dennis is talking to her about it, she's just like, I'm feeling something for the very first time. And I said, shocking. And then impatience for our next audience. And I was like, oh, well, I thought you're just feeling for the first time. That's insane. Then there's a long walking scene. It takes so long. Ooh, I don't know why.
I mean, it's again, one of these montages, and it's interesting because the PM shows up at Buckingham Palace. You see her walking up all the formal stateroom stairs while Elizabeth is walking up all the back stairs. And it's kind of like, what are we symbolizing here? That like Elizabeth's the actual inner workings and the structure.
Elizabeth likes to come in from the back. Anyway.
Ow, do we need to know that? I don't think so.
I'm just kidding. I don't care. It doesn't matter.
It's terrible. And so they have this meeting, and this meeting is very strange to me. Because the PM, you know, is like, I checked and we've had like all of these meetings and they've all been cordial and respectful. And so I guess I should have expected that there might've been a hiccup along the way. And, you know, here we have this hiccup, and, Elizabeth kind of wants to like brush it aside. It's like, oh, I'm sure a clarification will be forthcoming, whatever. And we need to talk about the business of the day. And the PM's not having it. And I kind of agree with her on that.
Well, yeah, no, it's bullshit. Like, regardless of if it's just gossip, I think I'd want to clear the air.
Right. And so she does. She's trying to. And Elizabeth is sitting there rolling her eyes at her. And again, this is an Olivia Colman thing. I do not see Claire Foy going, whoa. You know, these big kind of dramatic the head.
You really just don't like Olivia Colman in this role.
I do not in this role. I don't, because again,
he's fine. I think that, again, it's a lot with the direction as well. I can't only blame the actor.
Yeah, I'm whoever made these decisions, I feel like they weren't.
Well, also, it's the writing too. Like,
yeah, the writing.
So they made sure that it was her who was just like, you need to go and tell the newspapers that I do not like the prime minister. Okay.
Right. And then the prime minister shows up to a meeting with you where every other meeting has been like totally normal and businesslike, and you're just sitting there sighing and rolling your eyes at her. Why wouldn't she think you're being disrespectful? This is horse shit.
Yeah, no, it's stupid. But also, I'd like to point out when Thatcher's just like, oh, I'm this, that, and the other, and she calls herself a cold balance sheet. I thought she said cold banshee. And I was about to agree. But then she pulls the I was poor once card, and then she stands up for herself. And I do appreciate that she does, because...
Right. And she stands up about one thing that I think is... very much something that I feel strongly about, and I don't necessarily approve of all of her methods, but I do feel strongly that her goal is one that's well worth aspiring to, which is to get the country out of being basically a nanny state to being self-reliant. To get the culture of the country back to being self-reliant rather than wanting handouts. And I think that that is a very legitimate goal, because I think that that is something that we're seeing in our own country right now, is we've got a whole lot of people who expect to be cared for by the government. And you know, all you get from that is big government, and it isn't necessarily well done. Because you can't, the government can't do some of the things that people expect it to do. I know you don't like the politics. I get it. And this is something of an age thing. But you know, the PM is like, look, we're trying to change this. And Elizabeth has an excellent point as well. She's like, look, all I want is for you to back me on one fucking thing.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, like, she basically just wants to feel supported by the prime minister, because she constantly has to constitutionally support the prime minister. Well, okay, not necessarily constitutionally, but usually she has to support the prime minister. And she's made that very difficult. And the fact that the prime minister has rarely, if ever, backed up her, I don't blame her for feeling like, yeah, you screwed me over multiple times, especially on this matter that was important to me. And like, what am I supposed to do with that? Like, you're just screwing me over for the sake of screwing me over, as far as I know. They mentioned the wedding, Andrew's wedding's tomorrow. And then apparently Mark, the bad pansy ass twin, is getting married as well soon. And she says, and Elizabeth's like, your favorite, the explorer.
And the PM points out, and this was, I think, something the showrunners were getting very, very, they really, really wanted to get this in there, is that supposedly the PM's son had become a businessman with interests in the Middle East and in South Africa.
Yeah, so we definitely don't want that to collapse for poor little Mark.
Right, well, but it's kind of like the whole, you know, news cycle here about Hunter Biden.
Well, right. We don't need to get into that.
No, we don't. But I mean, I think that there is an element of the writers buying into that
idea. Thing,
that idea that has a parallel with today, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like it's one of those things that we don't know all the ins and outs of this, but boy, that was very important for you to put in there.
Hmm. Yeah. And then we go to the author who's trying to put out fires. Then you see the, which is just that. And then you go
to Andrew's wedding.
It's before the wedding. And it's really funny. And yeah. Do you want to say the line, or do you
want me to? You can do it. It's fine. But okay. I enjoy it. Want me to do it, I will.
Sure. It's fine. Andrew has gathered the children together to talk about what the hell is going on with their mom. And he's annoyed that his marriage isn't getting any press because there's a rift between the queen and the prime minister. And so he's just like, I don't get any press for my wedding. And then Charles is talking about just how irrelevant Andrew is and how he's really just a fringe family member at this point, because he's like fourth in line and you're not going to like, you're just not going to, dude. It's not going to happen. And then Charles just leaves. And what?
Well, it's the way he says it. It's like, well, I can't understand why they would want to cover anything about this fringe family member that will never be king. The wedding of a fringe family member. And he repeats fringe like multiple times. And then he leaves. And
Andrew says, did he really just say that on my wedding day? And then Edward says, that was impressively cunty. I love that line. I don't like the use of that, of the C word. I really don't. And I cringed when I said it, but I love that line.
It's like Edward's best line for sure.
It's his one of his only lines. So right, I mean,
but we'll, again, it embodies a lot of what we all think about Charles.
Oh, there were plenty of speeches later on where it's just like, yep, this is how I feel about Charles. And then Elizabeth basically needs someone to throw under the bus. And the author is going to get blamed for leaking the whole thing.
And well, here's part of what bugs me. It's Martin's idea to let's have
he,
a
yeah, he was just like, oh, noted. And then he just goes behind his back and is just like, yeah, you're going to get fired. And then, so he does get fired. Elizabeth watches from the window naturally. And she does this whole file flip thing from the box and looks at her father's picture while hearing Claire Foy's speech. And what are the quotes?
I have some quotes, but before we get to the quotes, I have in all caps some Tommy Lassell's bullshit.
You thought Martin that Martin couldn't be your senior? Oh my God, you were wrong.
Oh my God, how did this happen? So we got Claire Foy giving this I serve. She talks about, I want I serve to be my motto. And I didn't really give a whole lot of quotes. Did you have a whole lot of quotes?
I don't have any quotes.
I don't.
I have a lot of quotes later on, like a whole scene worth of quotes for like a later like scene in like a different episode, but not for this one.
Okay. I don't have quotes for that, but you know, Claire Foy returns to that speech and she wants to make I serve my motto. And you know, is calling other people to that action. The writer, we find out, went on to have a successful career as a writer of political thrillers. And the sanctions, of course, helped bring down apartheid, which I think was quite critical.
Absolutely. So best part.
My best part, Claire Foy. I do like Thatcher's stand on getting away from the nanny state.
Yeah.
That's it.
Oh, okay. Claire Foy being back, naturally, Elizabeth standing her ground, I think is important because obviously the sanctions did help and she had a feeling they would. So I think that was important. And also like the prime minister, like standing up for herself is good. And also the kids, that whole conversation is really funny.
Yeah. The kids conversation I should have put in there. Cause that is like one of those things that I remember across all seasons. It's like, yeah, that's
yeah. Shit. What are your worst parts?
What the never-ending montages, you know, this is so like, oh my God, let's have people walking upstairs. It's like, come on, come on. You can't think of anything to write for this. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And Thatcher's stand on sanctions, of course, is like absurd. So yeah, those two things were my worst parts.
Yeah. Margaret Thatcher's voice, the prime minister being stubborn about something that's like essential to get rid of. Like, right. are you fucking kidding me? And right. then the random author subplot didn't really like, it didn't do anything for me. And also the extrapolation of like, oh, she definitely told him to go and do it. And it's just like, we don't know. And I think obviously the whole point of the crown is to take like a certain stand on controversial things like this. It's not that controversial, I don't think, but it's like they it's not like they could like leave that in and not explain who, if she wanted that or not, and they went with that she wanted him to say stuff about it, so that's what we got. But yeah, what about, what's your overall grade?
I gave it a B minus. and the reason, and I know that I gave it a B minus because, again, I think there's some good speeches, good performances. I love the thing with the kids. I we didn't mention it, but one of Charles's things in that whole situation is he's making fun of Elizabeth for getting in trouble for expressing an opinion.
I think it's kind of funny though.
Oh no, it's hilarious. It is hilarious to me because, you know, Charles is like, oh yeah, I've been told that I can't do this my whole life and she doesn't, and she's getting killed in the papers. Ha ha ha. Yeah. So, you know, I found that irony somewhat interesting. But overall, it's a meh episode to me. I don't think it's a good episode. I don't think it's, I mean, I could go lower, but I just, it's meh.
Yeah.
What was your grade?
I gave it a C+. Eh. I don't want to go into it. I don't like it. It's not great. It's not my least favorite episode ever. It's just, I don't think it's good.
Yeah.
It's just, it takes a lot of weird stances and it just goes back and forth about who you're supposed to feel bad for. And it's just, it's a little bit jarring because it's like, right. Oh, well, yeah, sure. Elizabeth doesn't feel supported, but also she said all this shit about Margaret Thatcher, or like, it's just, I don't know how I'm supposed to feel about this. Like, yes, Margaret Thatcher should just like let them impose sanctions, but there are consequences which will make you see her side, and then, well, not really, but it's fine.
Yeah.
All right, and then next episodes are going to be season 4, episode 9, Avalanche, and season 4, episode 10, War.
Yay! We're almost done with the season. I'm sorry.
I don't think that's a great thing because I don't want to go into season 5.
But we're almost done.
Yeah, but I don't want to do season 5.
Yeah, but it'd be over, and over is good.
Maybe there's something I missed in season 5 that makes it
right. Good. We've only watched season 5 the one time, so maybe we will find something mildly or just something to curse about in season 5 when we get to it. But I'm excited to get this.
I feel nothing for season 5. Absolutely nothing. At least I have something to say.
I feel disgust about season 5. So yeah, I think we're going to get to that very, very soon. In any case, we hope that you join us and
cheers.